Welcome to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, where we talk about our food system from what we eat to how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson. Well, if you're like me, you've gone to the store recently and picked up some, say, yogurt, and you're going to have a snack or you're going to have it with a meal. And in fact, I just did it. I just went downstairs. There's a store right under where our office is. And I walked in and asked about the yogurt. They didn't have the one I was looking for. So I went next door to the coffee shop and opened up that yogurt. And I find myself, you know, looking into the yogurt, tasting it, it's delicious, and thinking about the farm behind it. Who were the farmers that were really growing the milk, raising the cows, and producing milk that they were able to ferment, put bacteria in, and form yogurt, which is very, very popular. And today, I think I've got the loop connected because I've got Ken McCarty with me. And Ken is with McCarty Farms in Kansas, and they have a great story. And Ken, we're going to get into that story. But I also know you have a great connection with the Dannon Company, and in fact, that's what I purchased. So first of all, I want to welcome you to Farm to Table Talk. So Ken, you're on the farm in Kansas, I guess, today. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Now, Ken, help fill in the gap for me, if you would. Again, we're going to hear more about your farm in Kansas. I have this yogurt in front of me, and it says, this one is Dannon Light and Fit Greek Yogurt. What's the chances that some of your milk is in this yogurt?
In that particular kind of yogurt, our milk does not actually travel to be used in that kind of yogurt.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Our milk actually travels to be used in brands like Activia, a lot of the brands for children, some of the more traditional Dannon brands, the larger volume products, the traditional plain. Strawberry, those types of yogurt.
So when you start off on a, you know, the milk that you're milking from, I believe you have all Holstein cows, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So for probably anyone listening to this knows that Holstein are the black and white dairy cattle. So you've got Holstein cows. So just starting with that connection, why would your milk go to these other brands and not necessarily the Greek yogurt?
That's due to the geographical location of our farm. From a sustainability perspective, it's more advantageous and more efficient for our milk to travel south to the Dallas-Fort Worth yogurt manufacturing plant. And at that plant, none of the Greek yogurts are made.
So kind of like in the old days, we referred to milk sheds and regional milk production. So is this something similar to that with like a yogurt shed almost?
Well, it's a little bit more unique than that. I guess to back up a sec, our family's story within the dairy industry actually began over 100 years ago in northeastern Pennsylvania when my great-grandfather started the family farm with 8 cows. He ran the farm. My grandfather took it over from him. Grew the farm to approximately 35 cows. My father took it over from my grandfather and moved a mile up the road. And he and my mom started their own farm, the farm that I grew up on, milking 150 cows. He had myself and my 3 older brothers and realized that there would be some challenges in maintaining a farm of that size, and providing for 5 families, plus the family of folks that we went to work with every day. So he and my mom began to look outside of the area, and we researched multiple different locations throughout the United States and eventually settled in western Kansas. That move took place in 1999, and we actually began milking cows in Kansas April 1st of 2000.
Let me stop you. Let me just stop you for a second so that we can kind of get this framed you know, where the progress was. When you were back milking 150 cows, at what stage were you switching over from hand milking to mechanical milking? Was that a long time before that, even, that you had switched from milking cows by hand to the mechanical milking?
Yes, yes. Many, many, many years ago, that transition, I believe, took place in around 1950. My grandfather was actually the first dairyman in our county to utilize a milking parlor and utilize a bulk tank, which many people remember the cream cans and the hauling of the milk by hand. My grandfather was, I guess, progressive and innovative for his time, and was the first in our area to transition away from that.
Well, I'm going to show a little bit of my age, because I remember as a little kid that there were still people all around me, and including our farm, that we milked a few cows by hand. But now the next thing is that you just reached a stage that you needed to get bigger for these reasons, and I know you're going to explain those a little bit more. But you looked all over the country. I mean, when you can do that, when you can say, okay, well, our future is going to be in the dairy business, and we're going to raise cows and produce milk where it makes the most sense. I mean, did you literally kind of take in most of the country and look at it, or your dad, did he do that and before he found himself in Kansas?
Yeah, that credit's due primarily to my dad and my mom and my two oldest brothers. They were both working at the farm at that point, and we researched areas in New York State, throughout Pennsylvania, Nebraska, all over in Kansas, and eventually settled after many, many years of research. We settled in western Kansas. So we began milking cows in Rexford, Kansas, our first location in Kansas, in April of 2000. For a variety of reasons, we continued to expand our herd while we were here and eventually grew into our sister farm in Bird City, Kansas, the farm that my brother Mike manages. And that farm, at the time that we expanded into that farm, we were milking a combined total of about 3,500 total milking cows. In 2010, we actually had a conversation with some representatives from the Dannon Company. They inquired as to the willingness of the American dairy producer to explore different milk marketing models. At that point, we were marketing our milk to a cooperative, and we had a desire to have more connection to the consumer, and I think Dannon had that desire as well, to have a greater connection to the farm. So we began our conversations and our relationship with Dannon in 2010, and in order for us to supply all of the milk needs that they were wishing for from this type of relationship, we actually had to double our herd size. So what that entailed is my brothers and I expanded the two dairies that we currently had at that point, and we also took over what was then a vacant dairy in Scott City, Kansas, and we began milking cows in that farm in November of 2011. We also began the construction of an on-farm evaporative milk condensing plant to allow us to more quickly separate and pasteurize the raw milk that comes in from our farms and get that pre-processed milk to Dannon's Dallas-Fort Worth yogurt manufacturing facility in a fresher and faster fashion.
Let me stop you there for a second. You said pre-processed milk, but in a way you were doing some process. So is that actually taking some of the solids out, or separating what would be water out and having it more condensed?
Yes, exactly. What this process entails is we actually separate the cream from the skim milk portion.
Mm-hmm.
The cream is then pasteurized and sold to a variety of different places. The skim portion is then evaporatively condensed to very similar to what you would find in evaporated skim milk in the grocery store. What this allows us to do is to basically take essentially four loads of raw milk and create one load of condensed skim milk.
Does that leave water?
It actually, we reclaim a tremendous amount of water, roughly 65,000 to 70,000 gallons of fresh water reclaimed from that milk daily. So what that allows us to do is it allowed us to expand that dairy site, add an additional processing facility that adds jobs, adds economic vitality to the area, and all the while we reduced our draw on the aquifer that we sit over.
Which is the Ogallala aquifer?
Yes, that's correct.
How do you use the water that you're recovering?
That purified water has three uses. We can either take it directly to drain, where it's used as irrigation water. We have the ability to reuse it in the processing plant, or our preferred use is to use it as drinking water for the dairy cows.
How do they like it?
It's purified, distilled H2O, so they perform very well on it. They like it a lot. I know I like it a lot.
You know what? That's the only problem with podcasts. This is crying out for an infographic. Maybe you've already created one, because what a story just even to that part. So now you've got this product that is going to Dannon down in Texas to be made into the yogurt products you were talking about. Is that right?
Right. That's correct.
So now I'll go back and I'm going to rephrase my opening question, because I picked the wrong yogurt for your operation. But I still did get the right brand. I just didn't get the right yogurt. For all these yogurts, so that your milk goes into, if I were picking up some of these Activia and some of the others that you mentioned, typically, how long ago might that have been milk on a farm in Kansas from the time that it's gone down and been processed and fermented and packaged and redistributed all over the country?
Well, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about having a direct supply relationship with a processing company like Dannon. It allows us to maximize and optimize the freshness of that product. There are days where, as we are processing milk very rapidly through the plant, we can actually milk a cow, collect that milk, filter it, chill it, test it, process it, and have it delivered to Dannon's doorstep within 24 to 36 hours.
That's incredible. People hearing this podcast can think about the fact that this goes back to a family farming operation in Kansas and Holstein cows. And I hope they can kind of conjure up that image. So if they are, and if they've had yogurt, like I've been having yogurt myself this morning, and they can think back on that. Let's go back to the farm now and talk about your farming operation. We'll talk about the people and talk about the cows a little bit. But let's do the cows first.
Sure.
You have Holstein cows, and are you raising... you're raising your own cows? Are they calves that you've grown, or do you bring them in and raise them to be cows producing milk for you?
So yes, we primarily have Holsteins. I do believe that across the four farms we have about five Brown Swiss and four Jersey, and my family has a bit of a soft spot in our heart for Brown Swiss cattle, but we do primarily have Holstein cattle, and that's what we breed our cows to, is Holstein cattle.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we raise a portion of our own young calves and a portion of our young heifers, but we do interact very highly with the groups that do some of that custom raising for us.
Mm-hmm.
Those animals return back to our farms once they leave at roughly 22 months of age, 21 months of age, about 30 to 60 days before they have their first calf. And then they calve on our farms. We take care of the calves, and they enter the milking herd.
When they're in the milking herd, how long are they productive?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, our cows will normally calve at 2 years, and on average, they'll milk for 3 to 4 years before they move on.
How often are you milking the cows? Is it twice a day? And what tends to be the hours that you're milking cows?
Our farms run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the majority of our animals are milked 3 times a day on a very strict 8-hour schedule.
Wow. So they're just one right after another. And so there's never a time, or hardly ever a time, that your milk parlors are empty? Because
They actually empty out twice a day to be cleaned and sanitized, and have the milking system cleaned and sanitized, and necessary repairs to be done. But for all intents and purposes, we milk cows roughly 22 hours a day.
What kind of environment are the cows in between milking?
So the vast majority of our cows are housed in what we call freestall barns, which are essentially very large loafing sheds where the cows are housed in their specific group and free to walk around and eat and sleep and drink and groom on our grooming brushes and do whatever they want to do whenever they want to do it. We do have some cows, typically those that are nearing the end of their lactation, getting ready to be dried off to go into their resting period before they have their next calf. Some of those cows are housed in what we call open lots, which are essentially large open corrals with shade structures and grooming posts and essentially tire swings for the cows to play on.
Wait a minute, slow down there. Tire swings?
Yeah. All of our farms, where possible, we have grooming posts, and in our open lots, all of our pens have for what essentially are tire swings. just tires hung off of our shade structures to give the cows something to play with.
Yeah. Do you have your kids get to play with those too, or do you, just cows?
They can if they want, but we typically have them working too hard to play much.
What do you feed them?
So we work with a nutritionist to help us formulate diets specific to each animal's needs based on her age and stage of lactation. They're fed primarily corn silage, which is essentially we grind up the entire corn plant, ferment it, and feed that out over the next year to 16 months. They'll be fed alfalfa hay, wheat straw, ground corn, cottonseed, soybean meal, vitamin and mineral packs, basically everything that they need to function at a very healthy and high level.
Now, speaking about healthy, a concern in livestock has been a concern with antibiotic resistance from antibiotic use. Does that factor in at all in a dairy production system as far as if animals get sick and they're given antibiotics? How is the milk treated differently?
Sure. And, yeah, I mean, all those factors are very deeply considered in everything that we do. None of our farms do any sort of prophylactic treatment. Everything is acute treatment for when an animal is sick. No different if you or I get sick, we go to the doctor and we get treated. But if an animal on any of our farms is treated with an antibiotic, she's removed from that milking string and put in what we would term our hospital pen, where we have very well-trained, specialized individuals whose sole responsibility is to care for the health and well-being of that animal. When she's moved into that pen, she's marked with a marking system that allows anyone on the farm to know that animal is in our hospital pen. She's not to be milked with the traditional milk. All of the milk from our cows that are in our hospital pen or any what we would call non-saleable milk, none of that enters the food chain. It's discarded immediately.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I have another kind of strange question for you, because there's in livestock, there's people that are trying to trying to make marketing claims about, you know, happy eggs and happy chickens and happy animals, which as a farm boy myself, I have a little hard time with that. I mean, because I've never really, I guess, thought about the animals as necessarily being happy like we think of people. But you reminded me, though, when you were talking about putting swings and grooming poles and things like that in the fields, that there must be some correlation between general well-being and whether or not the animals are stressed or not stressed, that shows up almost immediately in how productive they are. Is that, I don't know if I worded that as a question or not, but do you know what I'm getting at? Is that
sure.
Are you able to see like the well-being of 8,000 cows that if they aren't in a good state, that they're stressed out, that it affects your bottom line directly, even on their milk production?
As dairymen, our sole job is to care for our cows.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to remove any and all stressors that we possibly can and allow her to do what she does naturally, and that's to make milk. If we can remove any and all stressors or as much as possible, she'll perform at the highest level possible. That's our goal. Our goal is to identify those stressors and to get rid of them. And that's what we view the grooming posts and the tire swings and many of the other processes and actions that we take on our farms as it's just simply removing one other potential stressor that she may have in her life to allow her to do what she's made to do.
Well, now let's switch over and just let's talk now about the people, because at one stage you were a family, back into the 1800s and farming back in Pennsylvania, and you had one family that the farm was being supported, and then the family grew. You've got brothers in the business now, but you've also now got over 100 employees, and you've moved to West Kansas, and it's an interesting perspective to me. It seems like as you've grown, you're continuing to recruit people, hire people, and have people be a part of your organization, and even you've built community. Could you kind of expand on the impact that you've had?
Sure. You know, when we moved to Western Kansas, we were, unaware of the impact that a business moving into these communities would have, whether it be on just the local economy or the local school systems. So our family and our family of employees has made that a priority to try to have as positive an impact on our local communities as we possibly can. We recognize that our future, the future of our business, the future of our family, the future of our work family is tied directly to the future and the well-being of the towns that we live in. If these towns go away, then our business will go away. We're inherently tied together. So in how we try to interact with the community, whether it be through dairy tours or the people that we try to hire into our businesses, the companies that we work with to help support our business, the community donation programs that we've tried to develop, everything is geared towards sustaining that which sustains us for all intents and purposes.
You have direct employees, but then you're also, they're all running into town and buying things at the hardware store and the grocery store. And
absolutely.
So many of the people that you've hired, are they local, or have you recruited some in?
It's really a combination of both. The majority of folks that I work with every day when they began working with us were not local. I think they would view themselves as local, and the towns would view them as local now. After they've been here for 10, 15, 16 years, your home really is here. Now, that being said, typically when we hire individuals, they're from outside of our communities. And we've tried to do that from the standpoint that one, we don't want to steal an employee from another local business. That doesn't do anything to help our town. But what does do something to help our town is to bring someone else into our town that hasn't been living here before, to bring their children to the school, to bring their economic demands to the local economy, to try to do something to help these communities sustain themselves.
Well, I think that's exciting, and it's good to see them get back on their feet, because I've worked in agriculture and rural communities all over the country, and I've seen too many towns that have kind of dried up and aren't what they used to be, and to see it get a shot in the arm is something to be enthused about and be proud of. One final area that I did want to get back on, Dannon keeps raising the bar. I just saw recently where they announced where they're going to work even closer with their farmers on long-term sustainability programs, and they're identifying, you know, with all of the farmers that are supplying their products, ways that they can be addressing more soil health and better water management and increasing biodiversity and decreasing carbon emissions. Do they come and sit down with you regularly, and do you guys talk about what the shared goals and how the improvements are going to be made, and how your partnership can in a positive way reinforce these kind of improvements?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the most beautiful things about this relationship is it allows us to collaborate, to leverage both of our strengths, to get things that are truly impactful accomplished. So we spend a lot of time talking about ways in which we can be impactful on areas of sustainability or biodiversity or water reduction. We have shared goals and shared visions, and I feel that we've made tremendous progress in the past 4.5 years. And the future is bright, so we hope that we continue to move forward.
Well, and the future being bright, you have kids, and you've got nephews and nieces that maybe someday they'll get into the business as well. I'm curious, what's your family's favorite yogurt?
Well, we have a couple. If you were to ask myself, it would be the Activia Peach. My brother is a 00 plain yogurt, and my dad is a key lime Greek. So we kind of run through all of them, and if you ask our children, they love the drinkables.
Ah, well, that's
are very popular.
That's a great story, and hopefully those other children that are enjoying them won't forget the fact there's a cow behind the stand of it. Friendly farmers. I mean, there's too many that point the finger and just assume, well, big ag, that there's some problem, big ag. And the truth is, there's a lot of responsible farmers that have gotten bigger and are getting a lot more people involved.
Just appreciate your time and your willingness to let me join you today.
Well, the only thing I wish is that this is one of those times where I think the podcast would be nice if you could actually see cows, you know, as we're talking. It's, I guess that you've got YouTube and somebody Googles McCarty Farms like I did, you'll see you and see interviews and see you walking around the farm. And I think that there's a lot of ways they can maybe get the picture to go with this story. But hopefully they're driving along somewhere commuting or exercising and listening to us talk about it. Make them feel good about the next time they pick up some yogurt. So, Ken McCarty with McCarty Farms, thanks so much for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Well, thanks for having me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining the Farm to Table Talk podcast. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to listen regularly on SoundCloud or iTunes to Farm to Table Talk.